Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today on our show, our lead story is about the illegal destruction of public records by a school board in East County, a board that has been making it all but impossible to hear tapes of their public meetings. Then on Green Scene, we'll have details for you on SDG&E's new time of use rates that are rolling out starting in March, and what you should know when choosing which rate plan is best for you. Plus, hear why county supervisors have voted to have staff prepare a study on community choice energy options that could give ratepayers an alternative to SDG&E. Voters in the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District have received their mail-in ballots for an initiative that will decide the future of the county's last all-volunteer fire district. But the language is confusing to some. Find out what a yes or no vote means on today's show. Then, hear about full-time staffing added by the County Fire Authority to the Ranchita Station that has had many dark days with no firefighters or paramedics on site in recent years. This is good news for public safety, but Julian's volunteer fire chief is skeptical about the county's motives and timing, and we'll tell you why. On our Capitol Report, we'll have news about efforts by congressional Democrats to block President Donald Trump's emergency declaration to fund a border wall. A snow skier who fell into a not-quite-frozen-over lake in East County's mountains was saved in a dramatic rescue effort recently, and we'll have details later on today. From Public News Service, hear about efforts to expand federal funding for parks in California, a measure that could include expansion of Joshua Tree National Park. Then on Crime Beat, we'll have information on a child rapist that the state wants to release in Hacumba Hot Springs and how you can weigh in to have your voice heard before his hearing. On the second half of our show today, we'll have some top national news stories from Public News Service, including revelations that President Trump personally approved a top-secret security clearance for his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, over the objections of our nation's top security experts. Plus, hear who Democrats in Congress may be calling to testify next in their investigations. And learn about help for recipients of SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps. On Destination East County, we'll have top events coming up in March across our inland region, including St. Patrick's Day celebrations in La Mesa, concerts by Arlo Guthrie and Shauna Na, a Thousand Lights Festival at Santee Lakes, and many others. If you had property damage in the recent storms locally, San Diego County wants to hear from you. The county is compiling a damage report that could determine if our region is eligible for federal or state disaster assistance funding. And finally, as we approach springtime in East County, which is rodeo season out here, today we'll be re-airing one of our Wildest Jobs interviews with Lakeside's Rodeo Clown. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Some local government agencies, including many school districts, pride themselves on their transparency and openness towards local citizens. But the Cajon Valley Union School District is operating in darkness, willfully destroying public records. After a board member told us that the district's board had destroyed a meeting tape that she had requested in a timely manner, we put in a public records request of our own. One day after the December school board meeting, we asked for the audio recording. But the district later informed us that it had destroyed the audio, a clear violation of state law. Our records request was sent via email to the district superintendent's executive assistant, Naomi Rodriguez, as well as to the superintendent, Dr. David Miyashiro, and board president, Tamara Otero. The district's policy is to retain recordings for only 30 days, the minimum required under state law. State law also requires California Public Records Act requests to be fulfilled within 10 days unless there are extenuating circumstances. The district informed us that due to the Christmas and New Year's holidays, it could not comply until January 25th, and confirmed we would have to go to the district's office to listen to the recording. Instead, it destroyed the recording. Jill Bartow is the board member who says she requested a copy of the November meeting in a timely manner, but that it was destroyed. Bartow says the district refused to provide a copy, refused to allow her to make her own copy, but told her she could merely listen to the recording in the district's office, and could not even take notes with a pen and paper. However, Bartow says repeated attempts to schedule a listening session were unsuccessful. We requested the December 11th school board meeting recording to hear the public comments, including remarks made by parent Mark Roback criticizing the district over results in a new report by the California State Department of Education. That report revealed poor educational performance by many of the district's schools. While the Cajon Valley District regularly promotes itself as in the top 73 U.S. school districts for innovation and digital learning, the state red-flagged 8 of the district's schools as in need of additional support to improve their performance. While half of the county school districts were flagged for performing poorly in at least 2 areas, the Cajon Valley District received an overall district-wide D grade by the state of California. It received a D in chronic absenteeism, suspension rates, English, and mathematics. The California Public Records Act, also known as the Brown Act, says that any inspection of an audio or video recording shall be provided without charge on the agency's equipment, and that citizens may ask for a copy of the recording for the cost of duplication. A survey conducted by our reporter, Paul Cruz, of other local San Diego County school districts and government bodies finds that citizen access to archived meetings, agendas, and board minutes of public meetings varies. Most districts, such as the County Board of Supervisors, archive them in perpetuity and make them easily available online. During the February 12th Cajon Valley meeting, Cruz addressed the board during public comments to object to the district's illegal destruction of recordings. Terry Frank, General Counsel for Californians Aware, or CalAware, confirms that the district violated state law, both by destroying recordings in fewer than 30 days and by refusing to provide a copy requested under a public records request. Donna Fry, a former San Diego City Council member and activist who has long championed increased government transparency, called the Cajon Valley District's actions morally repugnant. Fry, past president of CalAware, a nonprofit organization promoting open government, says that government agencies are accountable to citizens, and elected public officials are accountable to the public. Rather deliberately, they ignored a very simple request for information that the public has the right to have, Fry says, adding, if they are running schools, they need to go back to schools themselves. Fry notes that elected officials need to remember that they work for the public. She adds pointedly that with power comes responsibility, adding, it is their responsibility to make access to public records easier, not more difficult. Unlike in the 1950s when the Brown Act was passed, at a time when large reel-to-reel tapes posed bulky storage challenges, technology has made electronic storage of audio files today an easy and inexpensive process. So there appears to be no legitimate reason why any public district should not make audio files accessible to the public on its website indefinitely. Until Cajon Valley changes its policies, East County Magazine will have our reporter record meetings that we attend, and we will make those recordings available free to the public on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our education section. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is John Fisteer with a Green Scene Report. San Diego Gas and Electric Company, or SDG&E, is rolling out new time-of-use rates as an alternative to tiered rates. The rollout will be done in stages starting in March, with nearly all residential customers slated to be on the new plan by the middle of next year. SDG&E Vice President Scott Kreider says the transition to time-of-use plans is a big milestone in California's journey toward a clean energy future. Customers may pay more or less per kilowatt hour based on when they use electricity under the time-of-use rates. By contrast, under the current tiered rate system, Customers who use the most power pay the most, and those who use the least power pay less. Using electricity between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. will be the most expensive under the new system, when demand peaks due to customers turning on appliances and air conditioning after the workday. Using energy in the morning or late at night will cost less, times when solar and wind generation are most available. Energy will be priced at 3 rate levels for different times of the day, as well as rates that vary by season, with a maximum rate of 45 cents per kilowatt hour. Customers will be notified 90 days before the rollout and will have an option of 2 time-of-use plans or staying on the tiered system. Those who don't make a choice will be automatically enrolled into one of the new programs. Not sure which will be most beneficial? The state law also requires SDG&E to provide you with a shadow bill for the first year, which will show you whether you're paying more or less under the tiered rate system than the time-of-use system. If you wind up paying more under the new system, the difference will be credited back to you. Medical baseline customers who need life-sustaining equipment round the clock will be exempted, along with low-income customers in hot climate areas. The change is due to a state mandate which requires utilities to adopt time of use. It is anticipated that some owners may invest in battery storage systems and solar panels to save up solar energy and use it after dark. Not everyone is enamored with the plan. Lakeside resident Barry Treehy invested in a solar system, but says SDG&E isn't paying enough for the electricity that he generates. He says that charging customers up to 45 cents per kilowatt hour for electricity used, while paying homeowners who produce solar power just 4 cents a kilowatt hour, is a ripoff.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. San Diego County supervisors have voted unanimously to study the idea of buying and selling electricity to give county residents an alternative to having to buy it from the region's utility, San Diego Gas and Electric. Under a community choice program, residents would still have the option to stay with SDG&E if they choose to do so. The board directed county staff to come back in October with a feasibility study that would include several options, including an option of deciding not to create a program, plus pros and cons, and a business plan for the board to consider. Community choice energy programs, also known as community choice aggregation, allow cities and counties to buy and/or generate electricity for their residents and businesses. The City of San Diego and several other local cities are also weighing banding together to form a community choice program. The board's vote also directed county staff to update the board and the public about the study's progress every 2 months. Updates that could include speakers from other counties that have created their own plans, and groups that have studied community choice energy programs. Board Chairwoman Diane Jacob, who proposed the idea of creating a community choice energy program along with County Supervisor Nathan Fletcher, said the time was right for the county to consider such a program. Jacob says community choice aggregation had come a long way since Marin County became the first in California to create a program in 2010, that 19 programs were operating today, including the City of Solana Beaches, and that 8 cities in San Diego County were also considering creating plans and perhaps even a regional joint powers authority. Jacob says that the County of San Diego has been bypassing SDG&E to buy its own electricity since 2001 and has saved taxpayers $23 million since that time, including $3.4 million alone last year. Supervisor Christine Caspar previously voiced doubts about the program, but voted with colleagues for the study. "I support clean energy," she said previously, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported. "I support lower prices, but what I can't support is getting into the energy business without a plan." Supervisor Jim Desmond had earlier questioned whether a private entity might be more efficient than the government at providing energy, stating, "I'm just wondering if this could be contracted out to a separate entity that would be part of the Joint Powers Authority that wouldn't have to have county employees or maybe just limited county employees." Supervisor Nathan Fletcher says that it was appropriate for the county to study whether it could pass those kinds of savings along to residents, and that data suggested a community choice energy program could also increase use of renewable energy sources like wind and solar power.
Voters in the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District have until March 19th to mail in their ballots on Measure A, which will determine the future of the county's last all-volunteer firefighting department. But the ballot language is convoluted and confusing to some. In plain English, a yes vote would dissolve the volunteer district and put the San Diego County Fire Authority, run by CAL FIRE, in sole charge of fire and emergency medical protection for the Julian and Cuyamaca areas. A no vote would save the district from dissolving and keep the volunteer firefighters and paramedics who have protected the area for over 20 years, with CAL FIRE providing backup through mutual aid. Last September, as background, the San Diego Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, ordered the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District to dissolve, as the county has done with all of its other former volunteer fire departments. But Julian area residents in the district mounted a successful protest, getting enough signatures to put the district's future on the ballot for voters to decide. The county says that residents would be safer under the control of the County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE, with professionally trained firefighters and stable funding provided by the county. The county used to provide money to the Julian district, but will no longer do so, meaning the district will have to raise its own money if voters opt to stay independent. Supporters of keeping the district independent say that having volunteers who live in the district assure that emergency responses can be provided 24/7, regardless of snowy weather or if CAL FIRE is dispatched to battle wildfires elsewhere. They note that local volunteers are also familiar with local roads and terrain. Now, some 25 new recruits recently completed a training academy with the volunteer district, where Chief Mike Van Bibber has indicated he believes the district can raise the funds that it needs. The registrar's website at sdvote.com has been set up with a special section where voters can see if their ballot has been received. Besides mailing in ballots by March 19th, that's a Tuesday, voters can deliver ballots or cast votes in person at the only authorized polling precinct, which is the County Registrar of Voters Office in Kearny Mesa. It's open now through March 19th during business hours. There will be no polling places in Julian. Reporting from Julian on East County Magazine's show on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
For years, residents of Ranchita, a small town between Borrego Springs and Julian, have complained about prolonged periods of time when their fire station was unstaffed, leaving their community without rapid response to medical emergencies and fires. But now, the County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE announced that they have upgraded the Ranchita Fire Station to permanent full-time staffing and are in the process of boosting paramedic services. The announcement comes just before area residents vote in March on a ballot initiative to determine the fate of the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Department, the county's last all-volunteer firefighting district. County Fire and CAL FIRE Chief Tony Meacham says adding full-time career staffing to Ranchita is the latest step to strengthen fire protection and emergency medical services in San Diego County's backcountry. However, supporters of keeping Julian's fire district independent of the county point out that there's no guarantee the Ranchita station will stay fully staffed if the district is dissolved. Since 2008, the County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE have taken control of 18 volunteer-run departments under a unified county command. Ranchita was once staffed by volunteer firefighters with the Montezuma Valley Volunteer Fire Department, but after more than 30 years of service, that department joined the San Diego County Fire Authority in 2008. Then, in January, Ranchita transitioned to the County Fire Authority, which began providing emergency and medical responses, though as of May, there were still 15 dark days, records indicate. According to the county, the station is transitioning to advanced life support paramedics emergency services, with the transition expected to be completed by late fall this year. The station also has 3 fire vehicles for emergency responses. The county press release did not state how many firefighters are assigned to the station. That's an important point, since firefighters are not allowed to enter a burning building if an engine is manned by only 2 firefighters, for example. The county contends that it offers the best potential for protection for residents in the district with professionally trained firefighters under the direction of CAL FIRE. But Chief Mike Van Bibber, with the Julian Cuyamaca Volunteer Fire Department, says he is skeptical about the county's motives and timing just before the election on the future of the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District. People have been screaming out there for a couple of years now, he says, calling the action a political move. Van Bibber has successfully recruited some 50 people interested in becoming volunteer firefighters and recently announced that about 25 have completed a training academy, with another session planned. Those opposed to dissolving the volunteer district argue that it's important to have locally based firefighters on hand, 24/7, 365 days a year, firefighters who know the back roads and who can't be dispatched elsewhere if a major wildfire occurs away from the community. They have pointed to long response times under county control along the highway between Ramona and Julian. Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District residents, seeking to keep their district independent, recently gained enough signatures to temporarily block the county takeover and potentially return their district to local control, pending the outcome of the March ballot initiative. A yes vote will dissolve the district and approve the county takeover, while a no vote will keep the volunteer fire district independent.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with the Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has passed a bill that would block President Donald Trump's emergency declaration and prevent him from taking money from other programs to build a border wall. The vote was 245-182, with all Democrats and 13 Republicans voting in favor of the resolution challenging the president's authority. The measure next moves to the Republican-held Senate, where at least three Republican senators have said they will side with Democrats. But even if the Senate passes the measure, the president has vowed to veto the action. It would take a two-thirds majority in both houses to override a veto. While many past presidents have declared emergencies, none before have ever declared an emergency over a matter that Congress refused to fund. The vote marks the first time Congress has taken formal action to block a presidential emergency declaration since the power was created in the National Emergencies Act of 1976. Trump contends the border wall is needed to protect national security. "Without strong borders, we don't have a country," Trump tweeted before the vote. But the Constitution gives power of the purse strings to Congress to determine how federal dollars should be spent. Those opposed to the president's declaration contend that there is no emergency, noting that Trump merely seeks to sidestep Congress. The budget passed by Congress did include some money to beef up border security, though less than the president sought. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says our founders had great vision. They did not want a king. San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis, a Democrat, voted to block the emergency declaration. She voices concern over diversion of funds for the border wall construction. After failing to convince Congress and the American people to support his wall, Trump is attempting to bypass Congress and raid funding from our military and military families, Congresswoman Davis says, adding that former national security leaders have spoken against use of military dollars for this purpose. She concludes, having been to the border numerous times, there is no emergency, only a humanitarian crisis created by this president. Border security is a complex issue, she adds, that requires a focus on professional and technological resources.
A dramatic rescue took place in East County on February 24th when a snow skier fell through thin ice on Big Laguna Lake at Mount Laguna while attempting to ski atop the frozen water. Two sheriff's helicopters responded within minutes after a rescue call was received, preparing for a possible hoist rescue. The first helicopter found the man in the middle of the lake, where he was trying to keep his head above water and struggling to hold on to the ice, says Sergeant Scott Bly. The second helicopter landed nearby and reconfigured the helicopter to use a rescue collar flotation device, which was lowered to the water. The man was able to grab onto the self-inflating rescue strap, and the helicopter then pulled the victim across the ice approximately 75 yards to the shore. Citizens helped the snow skier strip off his wet clothing, and hikers provided him with dry clothes. Showing signs of severe hypothermia, the man was flown aboard a sheriff's helicopter to a nearby landing zone off Sunrise Highway, then transferred to an air medevac helicopter and flown to Sharp Grossmont Hospital. Reporting for East County Magazine on Mount Laguna, This is John Fisteer.
If you've ever fished off a pier, swum in a public pool, played ball on a local field, or hiked in a state park, you've likely benefited from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That program could be permanently reauthorized next week as part of a massive public lands package before the U.S. House. The Natural Resources Management Act would expand Joshua Tree and Death Valley National Parks, add new off-road vehicle recreation areas in San Bernardino County, and add 80 miles of scenic rivers plus 700,000 acres of land to conservation and recreation areas across California. J.R. Young with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers of California says the fund has touched every corner of the state since its inception in 1964.
There's not a county in California that has not benefited from a land and water conservation project. The list is massive. It's just one of those critical core funding components that unfortunately not a lot of people know about.
Over the years, the fund has directed $2.4 billion to projects at places up and down the state, from Humboldt Redwoods State Park to the Lake Merritt Bicycle Path in Oakland to a sports complex in Merced County to Embarcadero Pier in San Diego. The fund uses no taxpayer dollars, only revenues from offshore oil and gas drilling in federal waters. Maite Arce with the Hispanic Access Foundation says the thousands of local parks helped by the Land and Water Conservation Fund are especially important to urban, low-income communities, so it's crucial to fully fund it going forward.
It's only been fully funded at its annual $900 million cap twice in 54 years, so on average, Congress authorizes Land and Water Conservation Fund to receive only about 46% of its allowed amount.
Its backers say the public lands package would also greatly benefit California's $92 billion outdoor recreation industry. It passed the Senate last week by an overwhelming margin of 92-8. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Fisteer with a Crime Beat report. The state of California is proposing to release Alan Earl James, a sexually violent predator and pedophile, in Hukumba Hot Springs. He has multiple convictions, including child rape and child molestation. The public can submit comments to sdsafe@sdsheriff.org before March 6th. Public comments will be included in the record at a hearing on his proposed placement. The hearing will be held on March 22nd at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court. Supervisor Diane Jacob, who has long opposed placement of sexually violent predators in East County, calls Alan Earl James the worst of the worst and says he doesn't deserve a life outside of prison due to his repeated sex crimes against children.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast. I'm Mike Clifford. President Donald Trump now reported to have personally approved the top secret security clearance for his son-in-law Jared Kushner. Also on the Friday rundown, hunger relief with the release of SNAP assistance, and Texas joins the national spotlight on social workers. First, our top story, President Trump ordered his chief of staff to grant his son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner a top secret security clearance last year. The New York Times reports Trump overruled concerns flagged by intelligence officials and the White House's top lawyer, according to four people who were briefed on the matter. Trump's decision in May so troubled senior administration officials that at least one, the White House chief of staff at the time, John Kelly, wrote a contemporaneous internal memo about how he had been ordered to give Kushner the top secret clearance. Meantime, in the wake of Michael Cohen's congressional testimony, Newsweek is reporting that Democrats are eager to hear from some of the president's adult children and a Trump Organization executive who the former Trump attorney and fixer said could corroborate and provide additional information about his claims of the president's criminal wrongdoing. Federal food benefits are going out to everyone who typically receives them today. Eric Tegenhoff reports that brings some relief to folks across the country who got last month's assistance early during the government shutdown.
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP dollars for February, were distributed 2 weeks early, meaning more than 600,000 Oregonians who received them needed to stretch those dollars out over 5 or 6 weeks. Don Myers, Oregon's SNAP manager, says families typically run out of benefits around the third week of the month, but that happened sooner during February. Misunderstandings caused other complications as well.
We were hearing stories from some families who had used up their benefits before February even arrived because there were some stories that retailers weren't going to be accepting benefits in February.
About half of SNAP recipients had run out of assistance by February 1st, according to Myers. Benefit delivery is usually staggered over the first 9 days of the month, but this month all recipients will get them today, March 1st.
Food banks and other charitable organizations do help fill the gap, but the Federal Food Assistance Program does the heavy lifting. For every meal the Oregon Food Bank Network provides, SNAP provides 12 meals. In New Hampshire, the number of people waiting in hospital emergency rooms for a bed in a psychiatric facility has more than tripled since 2014. That's according to the state's new mental health plan.
Managing editor of Laconia Daily Sun, Roger Carroll, says he was having suicidal thoughts when his therapist said he needed more help than she could give him. They agreed he should go to the emergency room. Looking back, Carroll considers his wait time lucky in comparison to others.
Because I didn't have a history of drug use, I don't use drugs, I don't drink, I don't have a history of violence, I was a pretty easy placement. Within a day, which is really fast, I was taken to an inpatient facility about 10 miles from Laconia.
But Carroll says he's spoken with many who have waited more than a week in the ER before a psychiatric bed became available, some for weeks. According to the Treatment Advocacy Center, the number of psychiatric beds in New Hampshire per capita is about the same as the national average. I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum reporting.
And a major conference in Tampa, Florida, bringing experts together from across the country to address why kids involved in the juvenile justice system have high levels of behavioral health disorders.
The 32nd Annual Research and Policy Conference on Child, Adolescent, and Young Adult Behavioral Health features a number of keynote speakers, including Frankie Guzman. He's director of the California Youth Justice Initiative, but was sentenced as a teen to serve 15 years in the California Youth Authority for armed robbery. Guzman turned his life around and became a lawyer, and now shares advice on supporting positive youth development.
But if we treat them as children with love and care and treat them as we would our own children, then in my experience, overwhelmingly, they respond positively. So, you know, I am an example of a success story that benefited largely from community-based treatment, from a public health approach.
According to data from Florida Kids Count, juvenile arrests are on the decline. However, involuntary mental health exams and temporary detention of children through what's known as the Baker Act increased almost 50% between 2010 and 2016. I'm Tramel Gomes.
And finally, March is National Social Work Month. Eric Galatis tells us a rally is set for March 7th on the steps of the Texas State Capitol. It's to highlight the way social workers help Texans of all ages overcome obstacles and reach their full potential.
Miriam Niesenbaum with Texas Chapter of the National Association of Social Workers says many people associate social work with child protective services, but she points to two U.S. senators, Debbie Stabenow of Michigan and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, along with a number of House members who are former social workers.
Actually, social work is in every fabric of life. We are in healthcare, in hospitals, hospice, home health. We provide services in the schools. We provide services on a policy level. We are legislative and policy directors for elected officials.
It takes years of education to become a professional social worker, and organizers of the rally are also drawing attention to salaries that are far below similar professions.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 100,000 additional social workers will be needed in the U.S. in less than a decade in order to address the host of challenges, including caring for the nation's aging population. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week, newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and you'll find us on the web at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes an off-Broadway live production in Santee, Mary Poppins in Spring Valley, Tomato Mania in Rancho San Diego, and Quartet Luminoso at Mission Trails Church.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Hooli Fest and other St. Patrick's activities in La Mesa, Arlo Guthrie on stage in Poway, a St. Patrick's Day lucky adventure in Santa Isabel, Arbor Day in El Cajon, Sha-na-na at Saquon, the Danny Green Trio at Cuyamaca College, and the Thousand Lights Festival at Santee Lakes.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Off-Broadway Live Theater in Santee will present The Bridge, which opens March 2nd and runs through April 13th. A special showing on March 24th will benefit homeless children and teens at Father Joe's Villages. The musical focuses on six people whose lives were forever changed by what happened one night on a bridge. The bridge knows their secrets, and during a reunion of their high school football championship season, everyone will be there, and the bridge is waiting. For tickets and details, visit offbroadwaylive.com.
Young Actors Theater will present the musical Mary Poppins March 7th through 17th at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. Based on the books and the classic Disney movie, the stage production of Mary Poppins received nominations for 9 Olivier and 7 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. Even grown-ups can learn a lesson or two from the magical nanny who advises that anything can happen if you let it. You can get tickets at the Young Actors Theater website at yatsandiego.org.
Tomato Mania, the world's largest heirloom tomato seedling sale, is coming to the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego on Saturday and Sunday, March 9th and 10th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can choose from dozens of varieties to plant in your garden and talk with experts about the various tomato varieties. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
Quartet Luminoso will perform on Sunday, March 10th from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Mission Trails Church in San Diego. As the second Sunday community concert series continues, the quartet includes clarinet, violin, viola, and cello. For a full list of all upcoming concerts in this series, you can visit the Facebook page for Second Sunday Community Concerts.
Famed folk musician Arlo Guthrie will perform a special concert at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, March 16th at 8 p.m. Son of activist singer and songwriter Woody Guthrie, Arlo Guthrie's career in music has spanned nearly 60 years. He first performed in public at age 13, and his first debut song of his own, Alice's Restaurant, became a protest anthem. He grew up around such well-known artists as Pete Seeger, with whom he collaborated for over 40 years. For tickets, visit powwaycenter.com.
You're invited to a St. Patrick's Day lucky adventure on March 17th at 2 p.m. at Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian. Learn some history about St. Patrick as you kick up your heels with an Irish jig and jug band music. See snakes like those driven out of Ireland in a reptile show. Target some four-leaf clovers with slingshots. Enjoy a petting zoo. And venture into a land of leprechaun magic as you seek some special treasures in a scavenger hunt. For information on costs and details, you can visit fortcross.com.
Several St. Patrick's Day activities are planned in La Mesa. Hooli's Public House is celebrating 20 years in East County with the return of Hooli Fest on Saturday and Sunday, March 16th and 17th at Hooli's Grossmont Center location. The hours Saturday are 5 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets are available in advance at Hooli's or at the door. On Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on March 17th, Grossmont Center kicks off a St. Patrick's Day family fun run, followed by a kids' concert from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Later on Sunday, Grossmont Center will host Whiskey Ridge and the 80s All-Stars in concert.
Rock and roll doo-wop legends Sha-na-na will appear in concert at Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater on March 17th at 8 p.m. The group rose to stardom with their portrayal of Johnny Casino and the Gamblers in the movie Grease, the highest-grossing musical film of all time, performing 6 songs on that soundtrack. The band's piano player, Screamin' Scott Simon, co-wrote the song Sandy for John Travolta to perform. The group also starred in 4 seasons of their own TV series, The Sha Na Na Show. Sha Na Na's latest album, Greaser High School Hop, showcases 25 of the greatest dance hits of the 50s and 60s, including the bop, the twist, the stroll, the monkey, the jerk, the cha-cha, and the hokey pokey. For tickets, you can visit saquon.com.
The city of El Cajon will host its 30th annual Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, March 16th at 8 a.m. at Hillside Park, receiving the Tree City USA Award. Trees can reduce the erosion of topsoil by wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate temperature, clean the air, produce life-giving oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. Volunteers are invited to help plant 20 trees in Hillside Park, along with the Lions Club and Key Club from Granite Hills and El Cajon Valley High School. SDG&E arborists will be on hand to provide tips on tree planting, plus you can get conservation information at displays by SDG&E, Waste Management, the Helix Water District, and the San Diego Regional Urban Forests Council.
The Danny Green Trio will perform at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego on Thursday, March 21st at 7:30 p.m. This jazz group's debut CD won the 2009 San Diego Music Award for Best Jazz Album. The trio is led by pianist, composer, and Grossmont College music instructor Danny Green, and also includes Grossmont College music instructor and jazz bassist extraordinaire Justin Grinnell, plus the versatile Julianne Cantelm on drums. For tickets, you can visit the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Department webpage. Go to cuyamaca.edu to find a full list of concerts.
The Thousand Lights Festival will be held at Santee Lakes on March 23rd from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., featuring a beautiful spectacle of twinkling lights from floating lanterns as well as lively entertainment and food. For tickets, visit thousandlightsfestival.com. 1000 is 1000.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and many more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
If your property sustained damage during the storms that struck our region, the county would like your help in estimating the cost for our region. The cold winter storms brought record-setting rainfall, flooding, and high winds to San Diego County. If your property or small business was damaged, the County Office of Emergency Services is asking you to complete a short damage survey form. The information gathered from the surveys will be used to estimate total damages countywide and determine if enough damage occurred to qualify the region for state or federal disaster recovery assistance, such as low-interest disaster loans from the Small Business Administration for those who are uninsured or underinsured. Completing the form does not guarantee the property owner will be eligible to receive disaster assistance. For more information or to fill out the damage survey form, you can visit sdrecovery.com or email the Office of Emergency Services at oes@sdcounty.ca.gov. That's oes@sdcounty.ca.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
It's almost rodeo season coming up in Lakeside, and so we thought this would be a good time to replay one of our favorite Best of East County episodes, our interview with Lakeside's rodeo clown.
This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Working hard to bring you the wildest jobs in East County. Today, Cody and I went to Lakeside. There we met a man who's going to explain why his workday is more interesting than yours, or at least more likely to end up in a trip, to the hospital. I'm here today with Kevin Higley, who is a rodeo clown. Kevin, how long have you been doing rodeo clowning?
Ooh, that's a dated question, huh? You're going to make me tell how old I am is what you're trying to get at, right? No, I've been actually a professional rodeo clown for 30 years. Prior to that, I participated in high school rodeo and as a contestant, and then I started doing what we call amateur rodeos as a rodeo clown bullfighter, and then I got my pro card and went on to the professional ranks, and so I've been it for, I bet you, total almost 35 years.
So you were doing professional rodeo as what prior to doing the clown part of it?
I was I tried to be a bull rider. Thought maybe I could make a profession out of it and a living. Wasn't very good at that. So what it came to be was my brother was a really good bull rider, and we had what they call a practice pen at home where we buck some bulls and stuff. And so we took turns being the bull fighter who would save the bull rider. Well, boy, I saved him a whole lot more than he ever thought of saving me. And so it became apparent that I was probably a little bit more adapted to the bullfighting area and saving the cowboys. And that was really the love and passion that I had once I got started, that, you know, the thrill of saving a guy so you can get on to another one is really something else. And as time went on, of course, you slow down a couple steps. Not me, but my mind may. I don't know. But anyway, so then I transferred into the rodeo clown / barrel man type aspect of the professional rodeo deal.
Now, you use the term bull fighting, which seems more appropriate to me somehow. So here's another question for you. I've noticed that bulls don't seem to have a lot of sense of humor. So have you actually made one ever laugh?
Oh, yeah, they're always smiling when they run over you. Yeah, well, they've got a smile. You know, a lot of people, they used to say that a bull will actually close his eyes before he runs over you. But that's not true. I can attest to that. They're wide open, and they are laughing. It's like, I got you, buddy. It's good.
So the natural follow-up to that is, how many bones have you had broken?
That's one we don't like to discuss very much. But, you know, I've been really fortunate in my career to stay away from most of the broken bones. I fractured a couple neck vertebrae, and I've had a couple of bones in my foot broke and a couple of things like that. But as a whole, I've been really healthy and really good.
Do you really like to use the word whole when you're talking about bulls and horns and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's kind of, you got to watch that one. Put you in a hole.
Now, I'm sure that people, not necessarily associated with rodeo, but people on the outside probably think that you would do this for the thrills. What kind of satisfaction do you get from actually doing this work?
That's a great question. You know, like I said early on, is just the satisfaction that you've did something to help somebody else to be able to further their career and go on and stuff. So saving a bull rider from a bull, or helping him, assisting him to be a higher score, that's where it starts. And that now it's the thrill of entertainment, you know, making people laugh. I just love to hear them giggle and laugh. And so that part is where I'm at now in my career. So we do it for the love, because, you know, unlike a lot of professional sports, the money isn't probably as good as your football, your baseball, your basketball players, but it also is an aspect of it. We do it for the money as well.
Yeah, so you're as a professional rodeo, I see that you have a big trailer, so you travel around from rodeo to rodeo?
I do. Throughout the course of this year, I'll probably be in at least 15 states. I guess the farthest away, which my trailer wasn't able to go with me and a lot of my animals wasn't, was Hawaii. We've actually did rodeos in Hawaii on two of the islands over there.
Oh, really? So you did go to Hawaii, but you just didn't float your trailer across?
No, trailer stayed home as well as my animals that I use in my clown acts, yeah.
Okay, so you do an act out on the in the arena with your own animals. I see you have a dog over there. Is that one of your...
Yeah, I've actually got three or four dogs, and I've got a trick horse, trick mule. You know, sometimes the kids become my tricks. You know, I'm very enthusiastic about getting the crowd involved, and so we use the kids a lot of times in some of the things we do.
If I ever were to find myself in a field with a pissed off bull, because, you know, that happens to me a lot, give me some ideas for how to sort of distract the guy.
Well, you know, so the best thing to do is, of course, it's not all about how fast you can outrun them. It's about the move that you can make to get around them. Because they got a big old body and they got to bend and have to get to back to where you are. So what you want to do is you want to kind of get in as close as possible and then make that move to the inside and keep them coming. And then when you get to break, you break them so they're on a different lead and you can get away from them.
So you have to fight every instinct, natural instinct, to turn around and run. And you have to get close to them, right next to them, in order to be safe.
You're sure better off. Yeah, you're better off. I mean, I know that my legs have never stood around for my face to take a beating, you know. And so it's kind of a natural instinct to run, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of different things you use. The apparel that we wear, the things we wear that gets their attention, that will bring them in your direction, and then it's up to you to make the move to bring them away from the cowboy and to get yourself away.
Okay. Now, professional football players, you mentioned them. They're always complaining about having a short career. Now, you've been doing this for a while. How long would you say the average rodeo clown sort of stays in the profession?
You know, and I guess that would be a term that's kind of tough to use, average, because I don't know any of us that are too, you know. And I guess the guy that kind of I look up to and kind of was my mentor, taught me a little bit, was a guy by the name of Wick Path. And he actually fought bulls at an active level, professional level, till he was 57 years old. It's all about how physically fit you stay. We've got a guy in the business right now that's strictly entertainment. He doesn't even get in the barrel anymore or do any of those things to help out. And he's 78 years old and very active and doing a great job.
Okay, well, see, my son here is, let's say that he goes to see his guidance counselor at school, and the guidance counselor, I've noticed, doesn't have any posters on the wall of rodeos or anything.
No.
But let's say that she says that she's changed her mind and he should forget about engineering and all of that, and he should become a rodeo clown. What advice would you give him for getting into this job, apart from why don't you do something safe like join the Navy SEALs?
Yeah, there we go. Two safe jobs. Well, I'll tell you what the first thing I would do with modern day rodeo, we have schools, and the best thing to do for someone that's inspiring to be a rodeo clown or a bullfighter or a participant, a contestant, is to search out one of those schools and go spend a week, 3 days, whatever the school is, and actually get a head start on what they really could do and if they're adapted for that.
Do you know of any women who do this job who are rodeo clowns?
You know, there used to be, years ago, there was a lady that actually didn't actually do the bullfighting part of the clown, but she got in the barrel, and she would tell a few jokes and do stuff. But that was a long time ago. Right at this present time, I don't know anybody, any ladies. I think it has to do with intelligence.
Oh, okay. That's an excellent point. Cody, you have a question?
Yeah, what's the deal with the barrels? What exactly do you do with barrels?
Okay, the barrel is out there for a particular reason. We had put it out in the middle of the arena. Actually, not quite the middle of the arena. It's a little closer to the bucking chutes. And it really becomes kind of like a safe haven for the bullfighters or the bull riders. In case that bull is coming at them, they're caught out in no man's land, they can come there, catch their breath, get away, or at least the bull will be distracted so they can move on. It's my job as a barrel man to position my barrel in a place which will help assist the bullfighters and the bull rider to be able to have a little bit more safety. So, and it's really like sitting in a washing machine just waiting for somebody to turn that thing on, the spin cycle. Because when one of those guys hits it, it can really turn your world upside down.
So it sounds like your job is more about strategy than it is about, I mean, obviously on YouTube or on TV, what they like to show is rodeo clowns being tossed and trampled and all that. But the object is to avoid that and to protect the cowboys and to entertain the crowd, basically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a given that you're going to be in a very bad situation most of the time, because, you know, you've got an unpredictable animal. He's gonna do what he wants to do. He's going to do his. So you're going to be put in a position where you're going to get in there that you're probably going to get what they call hooked and thrown out of there. But the better that you prepare yourself to be able to make yourself in the right position to walk away from that, the longer your career will be.
So you're kind of like the ninjas of the West, is what you're telling me.
I've never had it put that way, but yeah, cowabunga, dude, let's do it.
Okay, Cody?
So is it true about bulls that they don't like red, like don't like red capes? Is that true?
Great question. You know, and it really is a myth. It doesn't have to do with the red cape that the matadors you see, if the matadors are fighting, or like in our case, we wear bandanas a lot of times on our deals. It's all about the movement. It's the movement of something that brings their attention to it. And that's why when you see the guys with the capes and the matadors, and they can stand in one spot, but the bull will follow the cape and follow that deal.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the people of East County?
Boy golly, if they get a chance, come to the rodeo. They're going to enjoy it.
So, Cody, now that you've seen a little bit of what life as a rodeo clown is like, are you ready to reconsider your future?
No, because as much as my counselors say that I should quit any field that involves thinking, I think I should steer clear of this kind of career.
Are you saying that you don't want to get involved in something that can cow you this much?
You know, I have a lot of beef with you saying something that mean about me, Dad.
Well, I would say that right now my attitude is the lasso your problems.
I just don't know if I'm capable of learning the ropes on this exciting career.
Well, son, that sounds like a lot of bull to me, because I don't know anyone who clowns around as much as you do. This is Mark Clements.
And this is Cody Clements.
Clocking out of one of the wildest jobs in East County.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.